Oh, really? I might just be wanting a bagel with my zombie takeout. Welcome to episode 78 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And no listener submitted or news this week, so we're just going to get right into this week's movie. This is one I've been waiting a while to do. I saw it a couple of years ago, loved it ever since. And it is from 1999, The Boondock Saints.
Yeah, I was wondering how on earth I missed this one, but I mean...
Well, we'll get to that.
I guess that
brings us to the impromptu plot summary. This week brought to you by McGinty's Bar, where people in glass houses sink ships.
And where a penny saved is worth two in a bush. So, wow, this was one hell of a plot to summarize. We have these two Irish gentlemen in Boston. They kind of... I'm not really sure how they were so separate from the community, you know? How they just seem to have their own set of rules that applied to them in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, they just, you know, would walk up at the end of the church service and kiss the feet of Jesus and walk away. And the one guest priest there, of course, is like, wait, what are these guys doing? And the main priest there just saying, oh, you know. That's just what they do. But yeah, they're these two guys. They I'm not even sure how they got sucked into all of this. But
the bar fight.
And one of my suggestions for an episode title for this was the Orgasmo Connection, because well, let's look at this. We have a duo who are become crime fighters because they want to save... Well, their local watering hole was going to get shut down by a mob boss.
Right, right.
Which, the two plots, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
It's the plot of Orgasmo.
Wow.
Yes, they become crime fighters. There's no Orgasmo Ray or anything like that, or Chota Boy. Instead, there's a shitload of guns.
Yeah.
The other, of course, Orgasmo Connection, and I'm surprised you didn't say this right off the bat, they both featured Ron Jeremy
as
Bob Henchman.
And I have him in my notes. I didn't think of that.
They were both mob henchmen. Of course, the similarities end there. You know, they become crime fighters almost... almost like a Dexter kind of thing, where they're just targeting, you know, people, and they're just going to kill the crime fighters. And it leads to some awesome scenes. we've been on this steady diet of crap.
Yeah.
And we've finally been fed some gourmet fight scenes. Can't remember the last time we've seen fight scenes this good in any zombie takeout movie that we've
possibly
done.
Dog Soldiers.
Yes, exactly then. Right. And that was a long time
ago. Yeah, yeah.
Normally, I joke around and say something is a thing of great beauty, but the way these scenes were coordinated, they were things of great beauty.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have here, they become crime fighters. They have a friend who's also in the mob, but he gets set up by his mob bosses and winds up joining them. Bit of a hothead, bit of a screw up. Kind of looks like he's the lost member of Spinal Tap or something.
Mm-hmm.
If he were starring in Easter Bunny Kill Kill, you would believe
he
was a nut job killer.
He should have played Rembrandt.
Yes. That's the guy that this is like the only movie he's ever really done, I think.
He's done a couple others. I looked at IMDb. Apparently, he's classically trained, but the only movies he's done have been the two Boondock Saints movies and two others. One is now in production that I've never heard of.
Right. He would definitely be able to pull off many different roles. He should be working more.
Mm.
So he joins them, and of course, it gets messy because he's not exactly a professional.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing the whole cowboy thing. And really the thing that, I guess this isn't part of the plot. This is more a stylistic thing, but I'll mention it now. The entire thing is framed by the narration of the great Willem Dafoe.
Yes, I was wondering when you were going to get to him.
He should narrate every movie. Really, what they do, they start the scene, or sometimes they're at the crime scene after it happened, and he's explaining, you know, he's trying to put it together forensically what happened, and then they show what really how it all went down. And it's just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can say about it. I mean, and he's very strange in this, Willem Dafoe, too.
Oh, yeah.
He's sort of a self-loathing homosexual, forensic expert.
Now you can really see my suggestion for him taking the walk-in role in a remake of Heaven's Gate.
Well, yeah.
Because they both do the strange thing very well.
Yeah, so it did get a little weird when he started, you know, sympathizing a bit too much with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets, well, they go to confront their friends' mob bosses, and there's a deadly killer that they hire, played by Mr. Billy Connolly.
Yes.
And he is Mr. Head of the Class. But he's a badass.
And he pulls it off.
Oh, yes, he does. He completely pulls
it
off.
When I first saw this, I thought it was him, and I was worried when I realized it was him. Because all I know of him as a comedian, and
right.
I was shocked.
Yeah, you could say he's, you know, the Scottish version of Dane Cook or something, because he's huge overseas. But really, Dane Cook is an American version of Billy Connolly. He's around. I mean, Connolly's been around for decades.
Oh, yes, yes. But the difference is I Connolly is frequently funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've never. I mean, maybe this is just because, you know, my mother-in-law is Scottish, and I think he's just enormous, you know, because of that.
Okay.
I've seen so many of his specials and tapes and whatnot. Could just be me, but from what I understand, he's pretty big overseas. Uh-huh. And I'm not talking about quality with doing it when I'm using the Dane Cook as an example.
Okay.
I'm talking
okay.
about a guy who could fill
I see.
Any arena
gotcha.
That you put him in. So hilarity ensues at this point.
Okay, thank you.
The entire movie.
For lapsing into the review.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that Rocco, their sidekick.
Yes.
Was a bit of a screw up. But this leads to what I think is the best line in the movie. The one line I've remembered after not seeing it for probably a couple of years. There's this shootout in a porn theater, effectively.
And now you're a man.
And of course, Dafoe's character gets there and he's describing what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Best line in the movie. Because at one point, you know, you have the two brothers killing who they've to kill, and then Rocco shoots a bit. And he says, Dafoe says, good shooting, shitty shooting.
And it's true. He tries to do the cowboy thing, Rocco. He tries to do the you know, double, you know, one in each hand, and then he tries to do the cross thing, and... See, Rocco was just a delivery guy for the mob. He never actually did hits. But there's this whole crazy thing where with the Russian mob where they intercept where they're going to be. And, you know, the Irish duo, the Boondock Saints, you know, do the hit before mm-hmm. he gets there. And everybody thinks that it's Rocco. They're like, wow, he's really good.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is one problem with Defoe in the movie, and as I say this as a huge Willem Dafoe fan, he kind of upstages the rest of the cast.
Well, yeah, that's unavoidable, though.
Well, yeah, but the rest of the cast, I mean, there's some good performances. The brothers are good, but there are some very mediocre performances as well. But for most of the movie, Dafoe is just hitting it out of the park.
Yeah, the mob bosses, I would say, are mostly, you know, mediocre.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know. Although I think this is Ron Jeremy's best performance so far.
No, nothing tops Orgasmo, where he's talking about men being exploited by the porn industry.
Okay, I forgot that part. You're right.
That's vintage. Yeah, you're never topping that. This was done 2 years after Orgasmo. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting how the two had a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
But it seemed more of just an influence, you know, that they really liked the movie and they were going to do a serious action version of it. Not a bad idea, really, if you think about it.
Of course, as you mentioned, Defoe's character is a self-loathing gay man.
Yes.
This is kind of, for me at least, it was kind of foreshadowed a little bit.
Oh, definitely.
At least in hindsight, before you actually find out he's gay. I mean, he's kind of effeminate and, you know, a bit of a dandy, as to use an old word. But the real foreshadowing, and maybe just because of my musical knowledge, he first shows up, there's a musical cue.
Right.
That sounds a lot like Mississippi Queen.
Well, that I did not catch. I thought you were just going to talk about him examining the initial crime scene and, you know, doing it to this opera music where he practically dances around the crime
scene. Oh, yeah, yeah. And this was before they used opera for the... This might have been before they used the opera for the big action scenes, too. I think Wu started that maybe a little bit before, but this was him examining the scene with the opera, which was great.
Well, that's why we have to do Miller's Crossing.
Mm. Oh, that was the first. Okay.
There's someone called the Coen Brothers.
Who did it first? Okay.
Yes.
Now, the one thing you left out of the summary, they decide to go on this, the brothers decide to go on this spree because they get this message from God, or so to speak. That scene let me down a bit. They're sleeping in this holding cell because they turned themselves in from the bar fight.
Right.
And there's water dripping through the ceiling on them, and all of a sudden they hear this flashback of something their father said to them as a kid, and they both sit up at the exact same time. You know, and there's this chorus from heaven, and you know, all of a sudden they get the same idea at the same time. That was a little cheesy.
Was this a comic book or anything before?
No. The director actually came up with it. I forget exactly what the circumstances were, but there was a shooting or some kind of crime in his apartment complex.
Yeah.
And he had the idea to set up for these two vigilantes.
Actually, I think there's another movie on the making of this, or the guy that came up with this. How he, you know, got the Weinsteins to help him and then kind of burnt his bridges and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it seems very, you know, comic bookish, but it works.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there were a couple other, you mentioned the Weinsteins. There were a couple of other names that were brought in to work on the film, who were considered for parts in the film.
Yeah.
Particularly... Patrick Swayze, Stephen Dorff, and Robert De Niro all passed on it. Kevin Spacey was the original choice for Smacker, Defoe's character.
Yeah.
Branagh was even considered for a role in the film.
Wow.
But I think it works with who they have.
Well, if those guys were playing mob bosses...
De Niro, of course. Yeah.
Right, on top of the cast,
yeah.
This would have been just the best movie made. This probably would have surpassed, anything on my list if they had those guys.
Don't know who Swayze could have played, or Branagh for that matter. I can't see Branagh in this at all. All due respect, I'm a fan, but Dorff, I'm not a huge fan of.
No, I'm not a huge fan at all of him.
Spacey, as much as I love him, I think Defoe was better than he could have been.
God, that's a tough call. I mean, those are both really solid actors.
Spacey's my favorite actor of all time, but I think the role suited Defoe better.
Unless they're talking about Billy Connolly's role.
No, Spacey was considered for Smecker, Defoe's role.
Right.
But, you know, so I can't see Spacey pulling that off. Him as El Duce could have been interesting.
But Connolly was so damn good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't picture anybody else in that role at this point.
Yeah. Just fitting in with them. I mean, and he has a good Irish accent, too.
Now, as good as Defoe was, there was a point where his performance kind of broke down.
I was thinking along the lines when he was sympathizing with them.
Well, just before he loses it. Yeah, well, towards the end of the movie, he can't figure out who's committing these crimes.
Oh, he did, though. And that was the problem.
Oh, that was the – okay. I thought he kind of goes off the rails.
And, you know, he knew exactly who it was and everything. And, you know, as soon as he saw the DNA test, I mean, he had it all figured out. But he knew why.
Uh-huh. But there's this one point where he screams, it was a firefight. And that was where his performance kind of – he kind of went crazy a little too quickly.
I kind of like that part, though.
You did? Okay. Yes.
It was just so crazy.
It just didn't fit the character, though.
It was like an AC/DC thing almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Fire!
But it was just kind of out of nowhere because he is completely in control throughout this movie. At least as far as his underlings, and he is, you know, he has the whole thing under wraps. He knows exactly what he's doing, and all of a sudden he just loses it suddenly. There's no slow progression.
He's eccentric in this, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's always eccentric.
From the very beginning when he walks in and he's, you know, listening to the opera and he's dancing around. I mean, you know, he doesn't have it as under control as he'd like to have it. And of course, I don't know if it was just homophobic or if, you know, if that was considered, you know, just out of control behavior or not. Mm-hmm. But it's almost the way they play it that way, you know, where he's, you know, calling his boyfriend a fag and that.
See, I never took that as part of his unraveling. I just figured that was who he was from the beginning. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. He's not really, you know, together as he puts it, you know. The self-loathing part is probably
that's what made you realize that.
Yeah. Well, and he's in the gay bar, and he's, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the whole
bartender.
Yeah. Right.
But it didn't seem like that much of a leap because he'd already called his boyfriend.
Right, yeah, you don't really notice that part because, yeah, his boyfriend wants to cuddle with him in bed and he says, such a fag. And that's the scene you're referring to. And after that, the bar scene really doesn't really shock you.
Right, it doesn't seem like much of a leap.
Right.
But it is a step, you know.
In that direction, yeah.
Right, because he could have started a fight there.
True.
You know, if there's
he was that. That really, that he was just kind of starting to unravel there. Yeah.
Yeah. The progression makes sense.
Yeah, I guess so. Now, what did you?
Firefight.
Now, what did you think of the scene where they first bought the guns? The music cue there killed me.
Yeah. At first, I'm like, what the, you know, because I really had no, you know, I don't do any background check before seeing the movie. I just like riding the ride. So the lights come on. There's the Irish flag. And what I first thought was like
a howitzer.
Right. At first, I thought it was a video camera of some sort or TV camera. So I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
Not actually a howitzer, more like a Gatling gun, but
and right, anyway. Then I take a look at the rest of the room, and it's like, it's just an arsenal.
Or with this, you know, again with the classical music and
right,
the chorus from heaven and all of this,
right, and they're just loading up.
Mm. There is one spot where the movie kind of took a very swift downturn for me, I will say. The very end. Worst casting of the extras at the end.
What, the mob bosses?
The man on the street interviews during the credits.
Oh. Some of them were pretty funny, though.
Well, the writing was okay. But some the acting like, was hideous.
Those motherfuckers, they're going to kill them all if you bleeped out every other word.
And if it had been a B-movie the whole time, I would have been in for that, but...
it was just something thrown on in the end, you know? Yeah. Literally tacked on.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe I'm nitpicking. I also have in my notes that, you know, Connolly's accent is Scottish, so...
I thought he did a pretty good Irish.
Was he even trying?
I think so.
Okay, it sounded just like his usual to me.
They're very similar, but I think he hit Irish.
Okay. Maybe because I'm half Irish, I noticed it, because... You know, they play up the Irish angle completely through the movie.
Oh yeah, definitely.
The whole point of most of it, and Connolly comes in with a Scottish rogue, and he's their father.
Is he really their father?
Yes.
Okay. Just not the same family, but he is the actual.
He's their father because they only mention their father when the only memory of their father is from when they were young.
Ah, right, right.
So you don't know what happened. That's the only thing you know about him. So there's no other mention of him. There may be a mention that he disappeared or he left or something. I'm not sure. And all of a sudden he shows up. And he shows up when they're doing this prayer that he taught them, after every kill. And he finishes it when he was supposed to kill them in the first place.
Right.
So, yeah, he was their father. He was maybe biological, maybe just the one who raised them. They don't get into that. But he's the one who taught them the prayer.
All right.
I just wish we would have thought of this for St. Patrick's Day. That's my only... Would have saved me Leprechaun.
You didn't like... oh, yeah. That's right. We are Leprechaun. So we could do a Leprechaun every year for the next 4 to 5
maybe
years.
Maybe we'll do Boondock Saints next St. Patrick's. The sequel next year for St. Patrick's Day. Anyway, I'm pretty much done with minutes.
Yeah, you know what? I was enjoying myself so much, I was kind of annoyed that I had to take notes. I mean, really, I was just like, what do you say about this? I mean, they're just scenes to die for.
Well, that's the thing. It's kind of a thin plot, but some of the best action you'll ever see. Just go in thinking that.
Right, like the toilet scene.
Yeah.
The rope scene.
Charlie Bronson's always got rope.
The cat.
Oh, yeah.
And of course...
Which I had to watch, even though I've seen the movie a few times, I always have to run back that scene back to see exactly what happened. It always catches me off guard.
Funny story. I happened to just switch off the screen because I think I was either looking something up or I was going to try to take notes at that time. And because, you know, I figured, oh, he's just talking, you know, no big deal. And then all I hear is boom. This whole, like, Jesus Christ. So I'm like, oh, man. So I switched back and I have to, like, you know.
Rewind a bit, yeah.
Rewind, but for some reason my Netflix, when you go to rewind, it stops the movie.
Sometimes that happens, yeah.
Goes back, and then it has to reload the entire movie again. So I'm sitting here waiting, watching this bar go across, or what the hell happened?
Oh no, that happens every time you fast forward or rewind. That's normal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I just happened to switch off the screen at that moment of that scene. So, obviously, sequels and remakes, they've already done...
They've done one, All Saints Day, Boondock Saints 2, All Saints Day. From what I was reading, they've gone into retirement and are living on a sheep farm in Ireland with their father, and they're framed in Boston, so they have to come back and clear their name and, of course, kill the person who framed them.
Right.
And there is a third in the works.
Cool.
One more bit of trivia. I just noticed this. This tops Scarface in the number of fucks.
I was thinking that because there was one scene where he just he uses fuck as every tense of the English language, or, you know, every part of speech.
And they comment on that. Yeah, such a versatile word or something like that. It is used 246 times. The body count is 33, just because we were talking about the body count last time.
Well, right. Last week's, I mean, come on, last week's body count
was 7. This was 33. Right. And also, I've completely overlooked my trivia. The reason you don't remember it, that you it passed you by, was because it was released to 5 theaters for 1 week.
Okay. Because I was going to say 99. That was a crazy
year. Yeah, that was an insane year for movies.
That was, I mean, Phantom Menace. Yeah. That was, I mean, there were tons of movies. And I think even though I was in the middle of, like, planning a wedding and getting laid off by jobs twice, I was at the movies a lot that year. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I was like, how the hell did I miss this? This is awesome. All right, so I think that leads us to Brains.
Brains, because we've talked about sequels, remake, it's way too soon.
Yeah.
So, on to Brains. Now, like I said, I've seen it several times. Love it. There are some flaws. Like I said, I think Defoe upstages most of the cast, like possible exception of Connolly. And the acting at the end is horrible. But still, I love it. I'm going to go 4.5.
Yeah, I have to give this one a 5. There's you can't upstage William Defoe.
It's just true.
I mean, if you're on the stage with William Defoe, he's going to upstage you. There's no way you're taking that scene back. That's why the cops were just kind of afterthoughts, you know, you know, green guys.
It was basically give him his solo.
Right, exactly. And there's no, I mean, they only share like one scene together, don't they? The Saints and Defoe.
Right.
And that's it. I mean, they kind of talk around him in other languages and stuff.
Two scenes. There's the one at the beginning when they turn themselves in, at the end when he joins them.
Yeah, but they don't even really share that much stage or screen time there.
At the end, no. The longest one is at the really, it's really solid one is at the beginning.
Right. It's really the interrogation scene. And other than that, and of course, the stuff, the extras were just, you know, while the credits were rolling, and some of them were pretty damn funny too, because it's like, oh yeah, I totally, where do I sign up? Mm-hmm. And other people going, I do not approve. So yeah, you got to see this one.
Oh yeah.
I only wish that I had seen this 12 years earlier. So yeah, 5. It doesn't, I'd give it 6 if it weren't for the Spinal Tap.
Right.
5 Brains it is.
So what have we learned?
That you always take the rope.
I learned that Willem Dafoe looks horrifyingly convincing as a woman.
Actually, I thought you were saying ugly-ass woman.
Well, not, I didn't say attractive. I said convincing, and horrifyingly so.
That scene is probably the most absurd scene of the movie.
But he sells it somehow.
He's not a tranny.
So, until next week, when we will finally be getting to Zatoichi. You've been wanting to do this one for a long time.
God damn, yes.
Go to zombietakeout.com. Check out, of course, the album art, the episode description, the episode itself, links to our Facebook page, our Twitter account, the Podtrack survey, the links to subscribe on RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a review and a rating on iTunes. Also, you can email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail.
Leave us a voicemail. I happen to have that number right in
front. Very good. Thank you.
It is 414-368-ZTO1, or for the alphanumerically challenged, 414-368-9861.
And of course, always remember that you will be calling from the middle of Milwaukee.
No matter where you are. You'll always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee.
Yes. So until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
So what do you think? I'm strangely comfortable with it.
I think this is Ron Jeremy's best performance so far.
No, nothing tops Orgasmo, where he's talking about men being exploited by the porn industry.
Okay, I forgot that part. You're right.